Alright, audio recording start. Going back to KO Reader. And here we go. Symptomatic of this, perhaps, is the odiousness of nearly all those treacly tunes and saccharine poems in which popular art expresses affection. They are odious because of their falsity. They represent as a ready-made recipe for bliss, and even for goodness, what is in fact only an opportunity. There is no hint that we shall have to do anything. Only let affection pour over us like a warm shower bath, and all it is implied will be well. Affection, we have seen, includes both need love and gift love. I begin with the need, our craving for the affection of others. Now there is a clear reason why this craving, of all love cravings, easily becomes the most unreasonable. I have said that almost anyone may be the object of affection, yes, and almost everyone expects to be. The egregious Mr. Pontifex, in the way of all flesh, is outraged to discover that his son does not love him. It is unnatural for a boy not to love his own father. It never occurs to him to ask whether, since the first day the boy can remember, he has ever done or said anything that could excite love. Similarly, at the beginning of King Lear, the hero is shown as a very unlovable old man, devoured with a ravenous appetite for affection. I am driven to literary examples because you, the reader, and I do not live in the same neighborhood. If we did, there would unfortunately be no difficulty about replacing them with examples from real life. The thing happens every day, and we can see why. We all know that we must do something, if not to merit, at least to attract erotic love or friendship. But affection is often assumed to be provided, ready-made by nature, built in, laid on the house. We have a right to expect it. If the others do not give it, they are unnatural. This assumption is no doubt the distortion of a truth. Much has been built in. Because we are mammalian species, instinct will provide at least some degree, often a high one, of maternal love. Because we are a social species, familiar association provides a milieu in which, if all goes well, affection will arise and grow strong without demanding any very shining qualities in its objects. If it is given us, it will not necessarily be given us on our merits. We may get it with very little trouble. From a dim perception of the truth, many are loved with affection far beyond the deserts. Mr. Pontifex draws the ludicrous conclusion, therefore I, without desert, have a right to it. It is as if, on a far higher plane, we argued that because no man by merit has a right to the grace of God, I, having no merit, am entitled to it. There is no question of rights in either case. What we have is not a right to expect, but a reasonable expectation of being loved by our intimates if we and they are more or less ordinary people. But we may not be. We may be intolerable. If we are, nature will work against us. For the very same conditions of intimacy which make affection possible also, and no less naturally, make possible a peculiarly incurable distaste, a hatred as immemorial, constant, unemphatic, almost at times unconscious as the corresponding form of love. Siegfried in the opera could not remember a time before every shuffle, mutter, and fidget of his dwarfish foster father had become odious. We never catch this kind of hatred any more than affection at the moment of its beginning. It was always there before. Notice that old is a term of wearied loathing as well as of endearment. At his old tricks, in his old way, the same old thing. It would be absurd to say that Lear is lacking in affection. Insofar as affection is need-love, he is half-crazy with it. Unless, in his own way, he loved his daughters, he would not so desperately desire their love. The most unlovable parent or child may be full of such ravenous love, but it works to their own misery and everyone else's. The situation becomes suffocating. If people are already unlovable, a continual demand on their part, as of right, to be loved, their manifest sense of injury, their reproaches, whether loud and clamorous or merely implicit in every look and gesture of resentful self-pity, produce in us a sense of guilt. They are intended to do so. For a fault we could not have avoided and cannot cease to commit. They seal up the very fountain for which they are thirsty. If ever, at some favored moment, any germ of affection for them stirs in us, their demand for more and still more petrifies us again. And of course such people always desire the same proof of our love. We are to join their side, to hear and share their grievance against someone else. If my boy really loved me, he would see how selfish his father is. If my brother loved me, he would make a party with me against my sister. If you loved me, you wouldn't let me be treated like this. And all the while, they remain unaware of the real road. If you would be loved, be lovable, said Ovid. That cheery old reprobate only meant, if you want to attract the girls, you must be attractive, but his maxim has a wider application. The amorist was wiser in his generation than Mr. Pontifex and King Lear. The really surprising thing is not that these insatiable demands made by the unlovable are sometimes made in vain, but that they are so often met. Sometimes one sees a woman's girlhood, youth, and long years of her maturity up to the verge of old age all spent in tending, obeying, caressing, and perhaps supporting a maternal vampire who can never be caressed and obeyed enough. The sacrifice, but there are two opinions about that, may be beautiful. The old woman who exacts it is not. The built-in or unmerited character of affection thus invites a hideous misinterpretation. So does its ease and informality. We hear a great deal about the rudeness of the rising generation. I am an oldster myself and might be expected to take the oldster's side, but in fact I have been far more impressed by the bad manners of parents to children than by those of children to parents. Who has not been the embarrassed guest at family meals where the father or mother treated their grown-up offspring with an incivility which, offered to any other young people, would simply have terminated the acquaintance? Dogmatic assertions on matters which the children understand and their elders don't. Ruthless interruptions, flat contradictions, ridicule of things the young take seriously, sometimes of their religion, insulting references to their friends, all provide an easy answer to the question, why are they always out? Why do they like every house better than their home? Who does not prefer civility to barbarism? If you asked any of these insufferable people, they are not all parents, of course, why they behaved that way at home, they would reply, oh, hang it all, one comes home to relax. A chap can't be always on his best behavior. If a man can't be himself in his own house, where can he? Of course we don't want company manners at home. We're a happy family. We can say anything to one another here. No one minds. We all understand. Once again, it is so nearly true, yet so fatally wrong. Affection is an affair of old clothes and ease, of the unguarded moment, of liberties which would be ill-bred if we took them with strangers. But old clothes are one thing. To wear the same shirt till it stank would be another. There are proper clothes for a garden party. The clothes for home must be proper, too, in their own different way. Similarly, there is a distinction between public and domestic courtesy. The root principle of both is the same, that no one give any kind of preference to himself. But the more public the occasion, the more our obedience to this principle has been taped or formalized. There are rules of good manners. The more intimate the occasion, the less the formalization, but not, therefore, the less need of courtesy. On the contrary, affection at its best practices a courtesy which is incomparably more subtle, sensitive, and deep than the public kind. In public, a ritual would do. At home, you must have the reality which that ritual represented, or else the deafening triumphs of the greatest egoist present. You must really give no kind of preference to yourself. At a party, it is enough to conceal the preference. Hence the old proverb, come live with me and you'll know me. Hence a man's familiar manners first reveal the true value of his significantly odious phrase, company or party manners. Those who leave their manners behind them when they come home from the dance or the sherry party have no real courtesy even there. They were merely aping those who had. We can say anything to one another. The truth behind this is that affection at its best can say whatever affection at its best wishes to say, regardless of the rules that govern public courtesy. For affection at its best wishes neither to wound nor to humiliate nor to domineer. You may address the wife of your bosom as pig when she has inadvertently drunk your cocktail as well as her own. You may roar down the story which your father is telling once too often. You may tease and hoax and banter. You can say, shut up, I want to read. You can do anything in the right tone and at the right moment. The tone and moment which are not intended to and will not hurt. The better the affection, the more unerringly it knows which these are. Every love has its art of love. But the domestic Rudisby means something quite different when he claims liberty to say anything. Having a very imperfect sort of affection himself, or perhaps at that moment none, he arrogates to himself the beautiful liberties which only the fullest affection has a right to, or knows how to manage. He then uses them spitefully in obedience to his resentments, or ruthlessly in obedience to his egotism, or at best stupidly lacking the art. And all that time he may have a clear conscience. He knows that affection takes liberties. He is taking liberties. Therefore, he concludes, he's being affectionate. Resent anything, and he will say that the defect of love is on your side. He is hurt. He has been misunderstood. He then sometimes avenges himself by getting on his high horse and becoming elaborately polite. The implication is, of course, oh, so we are not to be intimate? We are to behave like mere acquaintances? I had hoped, but no matter, have it your own way. This illustrates prettily the difference between intimate and formal courtesy. Precisely what suits the one may be a breach of the other. To be free and easy when you are presented to some eminent stranger is bad manners. To practice formal and ceremonial courtesies at home, public faces and private places, is and is always intended to be bad manners. There is a delicious illustration of really good domestic manners in Tristram Shandy. At a singularly unsuitable moment, Uncle Toby has been holding forth on his favorite theme of fortification. My father, driven for once beyond endurance, violently interrupts. Then he sees his brother's face. The utterly unretaliating face of Toby, deeply wounded, not by the slight to himself, he would never think of that, but by the slight to the noble art. My father at once repents. There is an apology, a total reconciliation. Uncle Toby, to show how complete is his forgiveness, to show that he is not on his dignity, resumes the lecture on fortification. But we have not yet touched on jealousy. I suppose no one now believes that jealousy is especially connected with erotic love. If anyone does, the behavior of children, employees, and domestic animals ought soon to undeceive him. Every kind of love, almost every kind of association, is liable to it. The jealousy of affection is closely connected with its reliance on what is old and familiar. So also with the total or relative unimportance for affection of what I call appreciative love. We don't want the old familiar faces to become brighter or more beautiful, the old ways to be changed even for the better, the old jokes and interests the old jokes and interests to be replaced by exciting novelties. Change is a threat to affection. I think I might be tapped out. I can read the rest later if you want. Hopefully this took. If you liked it, I can do more. Wow, that was only 11 minutes? Seriously? That was a shitload of reading. Okay, I'm gonna send you this on Discord, without listening to it first. I hope it's okay, and I love you.